Order. Hold your hand up. Larry's got some of those and we'll make sure you get that. Anybody else? All right, well, we're going to look at the very first lesson in that material today, Young Faces of Faith. This was an idea that the elders came up with some time ago, and we want to talk this quarter about young people in the Bible who are exemplars of faith in various ways. We're going to look at a lot of familiar Old Testament stories, maybe some that are a little less familiar. Along the way, we are also, if you got a chance to read the foreword, we're also going to read about some people who are contrasts to those good examples of faith. So in most of our lessons, you'll have a character to read about who's a good example of faith, and you're going to read about one or two other people who are a contrast to the kind of faith that person displayed, and you'll see. What that's going to enable us to do, by the time we get done with this quarter, we will have looked at a lot of Bible people, a lot of different characters in this study. But what we're going to talk about today is just kind of some introductory matters. So if you'd be turning to Hebrews chapter 10, so Hebrews chapter 10, first of all, let's read in Hebrews 10, starting in verse 19. And we'll just remember that the writing of the book of Hebrews is written to Jewish Christians who are under a lot of pressure to go back to the old way of doing things, to go back to pursuing Judaism as their way of being justified before God. And the book is all about how everything that we have in Christ in the new covenant is better than what came through Moses and the old covenant. Superior law, superior lawgiver, superior priesthood, superior sacrifice, all those kinds of things. And we're winding down kind of toward the conclusion section as we get into chapter 10. So chapter 10, can I get somebody to read verse 19 through verse 25? David's going to read Hebrews 10, 19 through 25. Okay, go ahead.
Therefore, brothers, since we have confidence to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain, that is through his flesh, since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast promises faithful, and let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day drawing near.
All right, I should have asked you to do this first, but I'm going to ask now. I'm going to ask you to give your definition of faith. But I'm going to put one caveat in there. You can't quote from Hebrews 11 verse 1 to do it, because that's our next question. Yeah, see, some people, I tell you what. he's still learning. Give him a break. Yeah. How would you, that's the point, though. It's really hard for us to talk about faith without invoking that verse. And it's appropriate that we do. But Mark, what would you say about faith? How would you define it?
Trust and confidence.
Okay, all right. Trust and confidence. All right, Wayne?
Someone had said a long time ago, and I never forgot it, but that faith was taking God at His word.
That's good. All right. When we deal with people in life, we have to be able to trust that what they're telling us is true and genuine, right? We learn pretty early on in life that not everybody does that. But just in order for us to be able to function in life and interact with one another on a daily basis, there has to be this foundation of a degree of faith in one another that, when Wayne tells me something, he means what he says. If he says he's going to do something, then that's what he's going to do. If the company tells me that the price of such and such is X, then and I get there to buy it, I can trust that's what the price is going to be. That kind of thing. Sure. Okay. So when we apply it to God, it's taking God at His word. Jeff?
I like the phrase in verse 23, it's a hope without wavering.
Okay. Let's talk about this text, because what Mark in the book asked us to do with these verses is look here and find some words that express or reinforce that idea of faith. So Jeff's got one in verse 23. What is it again?
Hope without wavering. Let us hold okay. fast the confession of our hope without wavering.
Okay. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. Hope without wavering is bigger. Even that idea of holding fast, okay? All right. So let's go back to our illustration just in dealing with one another in general. I'm carrying on a conversation with Justin over here, and we're talking about some things. He's communicating some information to me, and I'm operating on the assumption that what he says is true. Can I read his mind and know with absolute certainty that he's not feeding me a line, that he's not? I can't. I have to trust. Now, I've got a good basis for that. I know Justin. I know the kind of person he is. I've got a good foundation for trusting that what he says is what he means. And when we talk about faith in the Bible, we are talking about a trust, or in verse 23, hope, because that's one of the things we trust in. That's one of the objects of our trust. But it's a trust that is based not just on blind, I hope so, but on evidence. It's based on God's testimony about Himself, even about the evidence of God in creation to a degree, but more than that, what God has revealed about Himself and His Word. That goes back to Wayne's definition, taking God at His Word. We have to do that with one another all the time in order to be able to interact. And what the Bible is, what the Hebrew writer is encouraging us to do is even more to do that with God. Let me ask this question. And by the way, we're going to have a couple of references along the way to some things we studied. I guess it was last summer. Doug's material on faith in the faith. Why is it that we sometimes find it easier to put faith and confidence in the person sitting across from us than to do it with God? Barry?
Because we can see them.
Yeah, we can see that person, right? We can reach out, feel them, and touch them. And we see them moving around. We've got evidence right in front of our eyes all the time that they're okay, yeah. And we have experience of interacting with them. That's a basis of that faith. Okay, that's why. And again, this brings us to Hebrews 11, which we're not going to go there yet. But we can't help but think about it. Things hoped for, things not seen. It's talked about in Hebrews chapter 11. Can we still have confidence in that? Can we have confidence in a God that we do not see with our eyes? I mean, we as Christians believe absolutely we can, because we've got abundant evidence not only that He is, but of who He is, what His character is, what He has done. We've got His revealed Word. We've got plenty of evidence that doesn't require visual verification, you know, of his person. Sure. Ernie?
I look at it as hope with strong expectation of receiving.
Yeah, yeah. And we talk about that a lot. When the Bible talks about hope, to go back to Jeff's point in verse 23, that's not just, oh, I really wish that would happen, but I have no idea if it will. It is confident expectation that something is going to happen. When you confidently expect something, you hold on to that, and that's the admonition of verse 23. Since we're in this text, give me a couple of other, what are some other words that you encounter in verses 19 to 25 that connect with the idea of faith? Chris?
In verse 19, it says, therefore, brethren, having boldness.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
You can put faith in there as well.
Yeah, boldness. Some of our translations have confidence there. Yeah, but your boldness is really good. And he says, therefore, since we have confidence or boldness to enter the holy place by the blood of Jesus, we have confidence to... he's going to talk about access to God. We believe that we have that. We are confident that we have that and that we can approach that access with confidence because of what Jesus has done. Sure. All right. What else do you see, Barry?
Assurance.
Okay. All right. Let us draw near with a sincere heart in full assurance of faith. Okay. All right. And again, in defining faith, or coming as close to defining it as the Hebrew writer does in chapter 11, that word assurance is going to come up. Yeah. All right. What else do you see, Jeff?
The term promise comes up a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
So people can promise things. They may not follow up on it, but we can have full assurance or confidence in God's promises. I mean, He has had promises over the years and has fulfilled those, and you can have that faith in that promise.
Okay. Why does a child believe and put great store in a promise their parent makes? Say the parent makes a promise, next weekend, we're going to go to Disney World. Why does the child not only believe that, but get really excited about the possibility?
They've told things in the past that come true.
Okay. All right. It's exactly it. It's because of who made the promise. That parent has told them in the past things, and you know, they've made promises before, and they have come true. That parent has kept their word. That child, to the degree a child is capable of grasping it, knows the character of their parents and knows that it's reliable. What Hebrews emphasizes, what the whole Bible emphasizes, really, that when we talk about faith, we're not just talking about faith, confidence, trust in a system of belief. Now, that enters into the discussion of faith. In fact, when the Bible talks about the faith, it's talking about the substance of what we have put, accepted as true and put our confidence in. But it's not just about believing a system of doctrine or a philosophy. It's about putting faith in a person. In this case, the person is God. And so the writer says, let us draw near with a sincere heart in full assurance of faith. And I think Jeff pointed out a couple of times, the idea of promising is here. He who has promised is faithful. We see that. It is a confidence in... those ideas of faith and faithfulness, obviously, in Greek as well as English, very, very tightly related. We put faith in somebody because they have demonstrated themselves to be faithful. They've demonstrated themselves to be reliable. We can count on them to keep their word. The child believes and gets really excited about and makes all kinds of plans about that Disney World trip because the parent who promised it is faithful. The child knows that. We cling to the promises that the writer of Hebrews talks about. We approach God's throne with great assurance. We hold fast to our hope without wavering because he who has promised is faithful. We put our faith in him. What other words do you see in this text? Anything else that jumps out at you that's a really good word that supplements the idea of faith?
Endurance.
Okay. Yeah. Why does faith connect to endurance? How does it? How do the two go together? Okay. We're going to Disney World next weekend. Okay. Every day between now and then to that child is an eternity, right? But he endures. I know this is small scale stuff. Hang with me. He endures because he knows it's coming and the one who promised is faithful. We endure. In this case, in the context of Hebrews, it's not waiting to go to Disney World. It's much more important stuff than that. It's enduring daily pressures, temptation, sometimes hostility against our faith, things that put our faith to the test, temptation to sin. We endure all that, but for the same reason, because the one who promised is faithful. Shane? Yeah, very, very good. Barry?
In my translation, it uses the phrase unwavering, which I think is good too, because in relation to faith, you know, that's another way of endurance is to keep from having your faith change or waver in some way.
Sure. Let's read a little more in chapter 10. Pick up with verse 32. Let me get somebody to read verse 32 down through the end of the chapter. So we're going to read chapter 10, verse 32 down to verse 39. And let's see if we just spot a couple more words in that section of Hebrews 10 that are, that are good supplements to the idea of faith, that express or reinforce it. Who's got that? Ernie, go ahead.
But remember the former days when, after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict and suffering. Partly by being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulation, and partly by becoming shared with those who were so treated. For you showed sympathy to the prisoner and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and a lasting one. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. For yet in a very little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul.
All right. To go back to David's point earlier, endurance. The word comes up twice in this text. Verse 32, you endured a great conflict of suffering. Verse 36, you have need of endurance so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. Okay, so got that idea. Anything else in those verses that you see any words or phrases that are that really reinforce that idea of faith? Chris? Okay, yeah. Do not throw away your confidence. Okay, there's that idea of confidence again, and the writer said, don't cast it aside. Don't throw it away. Sure, because it has great reward. Okay, somebody else?
Preserving the soul.
Yeah, okay, that idea of preserving the soul, that very last verse. We are not of those who shrink back to destruction. We are of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. That's the outcome of faith. That's the ultimate reward of faith. But it's, you know, that is dependent on my continuing to show and demonstrate that faith rather than shrink back from it. That's a big part of the warning of Hebrews. The Hebrew writer, in essence, tells his audience, you are so close to that reward because of your faith. Don't draw back from it. Don't let a little bit of pressure cause you to throw it away. The idea also in this text of a better lasting possession in verse 34. That's what we have confidence in. Something that's even better than anything we are able to appreciate right now. Confidence, great reward, endurance. Anything else, that's a lot. That's a lot in this chapter, and we haven't even gotten to what we call the faith chapter in Hebrews yet. That's chapter 11. But he's given us a number of ideas that connect to faith. And what you're going to see as we go through this quarter, you're going to see people who they demonstrated those qualities we've been talking about. Confidence, sincerity, full assurance. They held fast, sometimes in really, really difficult circumstances. They didn't waver. They believed in the one who promised as faithful. They were looking for a better lasting possession. They had confidence. They were anticipating a reward. They endured all these things that Hebrews 10. And you're going to see counterexamples of people who did exactly the opposite. So you watch for that as we go through this quarter. We ready for chapter 11? Go ahead, Doug. Right.
It moves forward,
action. Yeah, and that is so important, and that's part of why we're doing this study this quarter. It's to see these are not people who just sat around believing things, or sat around feeling confidence in things. Now they believed, they felt confidence, but the reason we have these Bible stories is because of what those people allowed faith to motivate them to do. And again, sometimes what they did in reaction to or in response to opposition to their faith. Doug's exactly right, and the Hebrew writer really stresses that. Faith does things. What's chapter 11 all about? It's about what great heroes of the past did by their faith. We're going to talk about some of these people this quarter. As we're talking again about young people and as Mark put it, relatively young people. So, you know, we can kind of broaden the category a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about chapter 11. So, here's chapter 11 and verse 1. Faith is, I'm reading from the New American Standard Version, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Now, your translation may have different words than assurance and conviction in trying to convey the words that the Greek words the original writer used. So what do you have there? Faith is the what of things hoped for? Substance. Okay. All right. It's a real popular one. Anything else?
Realization.
Okay. All right. It makes real. It gives substance to things that we hope for. What a great description. And then the second one, faith is the what of things not seen. All right, conviction, evidence. Anybody got a different word than that?
Assurance.
Assurance is good, okay. All right. And so what the writer says is faith makes real to us the things that we hope for. And it provides conviction, assurance of things that we don't see with our eyes right now. I don't know, we don't often think about this, but every time you get into a car, you are exercising a degree of faith in a whole lot of things. Okay? I want you to... You know, they taught us this in driver school way back when. But ultimately, you know what's connecting your car to the pavement? At any given moment, it's four patches of rubber about this big. That's it. It's not even the whole tire. It's just whatever part of the tire is in contact with the pavement at that moment. That's what's connecting. That's not very much. That's a little bitty bit of surface area, and you're hurtling along in a two-ton car, okay? So, you know, there's that you've placed your faith in. You've placed your faith in the fellows who designed the car, the people who built that car, the people who built and designed all the parts that went into making up that car. Have you gotten around to all those folks and met them personally? Did you do that before you bought the car? I want to meet the guy who designed this. I want to get to know him. Okay, we don't do that. You're also placing your faith in numerous laws of physics that you may only have a marginal grasp of. You know, I know that's the case with me. I know I do this and the car does that. I may not know all the reasons why. But we do that without hesitation all the time. We put our confidence in those operating. Now, we got good reason for that confidence. We've got abundant evidence that that confidence is not misplaced. But we do that. We put our confidence in things that we don't see or in people that we don't see, and we do that readily. That's faith. Now, that's not necessarily, that's not biblical faith, but you know, we're understanding the idea. James, go ahead.
We also have faith in the other drivers.
Oh my goodness, yeah, that's, oh, I'm not sure that I do. But yeah, but is there a degree to which you have to have a little bit of faith in all the other people who are driving? Yeah, you've got to. Now, we see plenty of evidence that sometimes that faith is misplaced. But just think about the number of times that you're able to drive from point A to B. Great example. I got rear-ended last Tuesday. All right, day before the birth of my first grandchild, and my car gets rear-ended over in Davenport. It's probably totaled. We're waiting on the official word from that. Okay, but I thought, think of the number of times that I drive from point A to B, and that doesn't happen. All the other people in their cars do what they're supposed to do. They follow the rules. They pay attention. And there isn't an accident. So that involves a degree of faith too. Now that is, as most analogies are, a poor one to faith in God. But it helps us understand that, you know, that this is not something we only do when it comes to spiritual matters. We do it all the time. When we read history, we exercise a degree of faith that it has been reported accurately, because we can't go back and witness those things for ourselves. We have to trust testimony. The writer of Hebrews talks a lot about divine testimony. Okay? Shane, go ahead. You had a thought?
Well, when you think about these examples, you know, and you mentioned it, by and large, we can, as a general rule, examples where that doesn't happen. But when you compare that to God, there are no examples, there's nothing that can cause us pause or give us pause to say, well, there was that one time. There's not a single time. And that goes with God keeping his promises both to reward and to punish.
Yeah, very good. And the Hebrew writer talks about both of those things. Yes, yes, very good. Let's think about the people. We won't take time to read through all of this at the moment. Well, let's just look at the names that we encounter in Hebrews 11 down through about verse 16. Starting in verse 4, who's the first person that's named? Abel. And it says, by faith, Abel offered a better sacrifice than Cain. Okay. Remember back in Genesis chapter 4, tells us that Cain and Abel brought their respective sacrifices to God. God had regard for, that is, he accepted Abel and his sacrifice, but not Cain's. Now, it doesn't. The text of Genesis doesn't go into great detail about all of that. But what we are, what we can clearly infer, there was something about Cain's sacrifice that was not in conformity with God's expectations. This is not God being just acting on a whim or showing favoritism. Faith acts in response to testimony, and that's what Abel did, and in some way, Cain did not. So Abel offered a better sacrifice. So even in the matter of the response of worship, that's an important ideal. What about Enoch? Verse 5. What does it say about Enoch?
Translated.
Okay. Yeah, it talks about him being translated or taken up. He did not see death. Why? Well, when you go back and read in Genesis about Enoch's life, it says he walked with God. He lived in conformity to the will of God to an exceptional degree. I don't think that means he was flawless. I think it means he was exceptional. Talking about, okay, so already, what do we see about faith? Just in these two examples, it goes back to Doug's point earlier. We see action. That's what Hebrews 11 is all about. It is about faith acting. And in some of these cases, people are gonna accomplish things that might have seemed impossible, but they did it because they put their trust in the one who made the promises. All right? So we got Abel. We've got Enoch. What about verse 7? Who's down there in verse 7? Noah. All right? What do you know about Noah? Okay. Yeah. Notice that. Says he was moved with godly fear, or warned in reverence. Warned by God, and he responded in reverence to God with action. Of course, what did God tell Noah to do? All right. He told him to build this vessel that would be for the preservation of life. Go back to Genesis 6, Genesis 7, read about all of that. Here's a really good example of somebody who is acting against the tide of the culture he's in. As Genesis 6 tells us about the world of Noah's day, that every thought of the intents of man's heart was only evil continually, except for Noah and his family. Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. He was righteous. So here's Noah, who is essentially the only person, or at least the only family on the planet, who is living by faith. And he is given this particular task, and carries it out, against something that might have seemed to be impossible. It's always fun to speculate a little bit about what Noah's initial reaction would have been when God told him, "Here's what I'm going to do, and here's what you're going to do." All right. Somebody had a hand up. Shane, go ahead. I'm glad you said that, especially that last part, because I like to compare Hebrews 11 with 1 Corinthians 13, because in a way, Hebrews 11 does for faith what 1 Corinthians 13 does for love. Paul talks about love in 1 Corinthians 13 and talks about it in terms of what it does. You know, that grand description of love that starts in verse 4. It's I think, 15 action verbs all through there. This is what love does. Well, in Hebrews 11, this is what faith does. Instead of defining it or talking about it even in terms of abstractions, the writer of Hebrews says, let me give you some examples. Let's start with Cain and Abel, and let's work our way through some Old Testament history. This is what faith does. This is what faith looks like. All right. So who's next on the list? Verse 8, Abraham. Got a couple of things said about Abraham. In fact, that really, Abraham's story takes us down through verse 16, kind of the focus of this part of our lesson. So what does the Hebrew writer focus on with regard to Abraham? How does he demonstrate faith?
His willingness to sacrifice Isaac.
Okay, all right. One of the big things he talks about is his willingness to sacrifice Isaac, the son of promise. That's really down in verse 17 that he gets to that. But that's a big one. Okay, what he starts out with is Abraham in verse 8 obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive as an inheritance, and verse 8, he went out not knowing where he was going. What did he say about faith? It's the substance of things hoped for, the evidence or conviction or assurance of things not seen. God says, Abraham, I want you to leave your homeland, pack up, leave behind your kinfolk. He takes his immediate family with him. You go to a land that I will show you. God essentially says, I'll tell you when you get there what this land is. And Abraham just goes. Because he trusts in the faithful God who gives him this direction. And so verse 9 talks about him. When he gets to that land, what's his status in that land? Verse 9. Yeah, he's a resident alien in the land of Canaan. His whole life that he's there, he is Abraham is a nomadic herdsman, not a poor one, very wealthy one, but he doesn't stay in one place all the time, doesn't own real estate in the land of Canaan. He is a resident alien. He's a foreigner living among these people. And Genesis talks about how he earns their respect. And the only parcel of land he acquires is when his wife dies and he acquires a place to bury her. That's it. Because verse 10, he was looking, it talks about Isaac and Jacob also being with him. He was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. We're going to come back to that idea in a minute. But that's a good expression of faith. Remember verse 10. We're going to come back to that in a minute. What about Sarah, Abraham's wife, in verse 11? What does she do by faith? Okay. Remember, Abraham and Sarah, they're in old age when all of this happens. Abraham is not a young man when he is called to go to the land that God will show him. And he and his wife don't have any children. Remember in Genesis 12, God starts making all these promises to Abraham about not only about the land, but about his descendants, about making him a great nation and all. And Abraham doesn't have any children. And think about that. Remember when we studied Genesis, we emphasized this. God makes all these promises that are contingent on children to a man who not only doesn't have any children, but from all appearances, can't have any children. He and his wife are too old. And what does Abraham do? He believes the promises. And he acts on that belief by going wherever God directs. Now, there are some imperfections in all of that, okay, in Abraham and Sarah's confidence. It wavered a little bit. That's why, remember when Sarah suggested, well, he can have a child with my handmaiden, Hagar. And that did not work out well. Created a lot of family stress. And God said, nope, you and Sarah are going to have a child. And they did. God made good on that promise. So many of these promises are dependent on them having a child. And they do. So verse 12 says, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, innumerable as the sand by the seashore. And there are plenty more examples of faith here in Hebrews chapter 11, but let's go ahead and look at question number 4 for a minute. Verse 10 will connect to this. Verses 13 to 16 will connect to this. How does faith in God's promises affect people's perspective on this life? How did it affect theirs? What does verse 10 say Abraham was looking for? All right. He was looking for a city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. That's why he was content not to have a city or you know a parcel of land of his own in the land. He was content to dwell as a sojourner in Canaan. He wasn't concerned about that. He was looking for something eternal. And then verse 13, all of these died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. So just like the city which has foundations in verse 10, a country of their own. Verse 14, and indeed if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. So, back to the question, how did their faith affect their perspective on life? Barry?
Well, they didn't put their confidence in the things that they had or owned, like Abraham didn't own, you know, land. He had herds and things like that, which gave him wealth, but he didn't put his confidence in that. And they always looked to what was coming next from God, and the heavenly goal is really the spiritual side.
Okay. All right. All right. Somebody else? Great. Great thoughts. Chris?
Kind of goes back to last week's lesson where Paul said his citizenship is in heaven. And that's obviously what they see as well.
Yeah, what you have here in Hebrews is just another way of saying exactly what Paul said in Philippians 3. Yeah. Our citizenship is in heaven. They understood that theirs was as well. Mark? Yeah, that's a great point. In case you didn't hear what Mark said, in Stephen's blistering indictment, we call it his defense, but it's way more than that. In Acts chapter 7, he speaks to this to the Jewish council and shows them that they are behaving just like generation after generation of their ancestors who, in various ways, rejected God. So this is nothing new. They are rejecting the culmination of promises that God has been making to his people since the very beginning. And he goes all the way back. Yeah, great point. And by the way, he also in that sermon makes the point that God doesn't need a special place to live in. He is not confined to one location or even one group of people. He doesn't have to be. A little subtext to it there. And in Hebrews 11, it's these people, Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, and others, lived in view of promises. What does he say about the promises? Did they receive the promises? What he's saying is that it's not that they didn't get what, you know, they didn't receive the reward of righteousness. He's saying they didn't live to see the ultimate fulfillment of the promises God was making in their day. Did Abraham live to see the promises fulfilled that he was going to become a great nation? No, but he believed it. Did he live to see the ultimate promise, in you all the nations of the earth will be blessed? Because that's Jesus. Abraham doesn't live to see that, but he believes in the promise. And the writer is saying to the Hebrews, essentially, now you are the recipients of that promise. You need to live by the same faith as these people who didn't receive it, but still believe. Right. Great point. We'll leave it there, and we'll continue on Wednesday night talking about young people of faith. So let's be ready for that. Young Faces of Faith. If you haven't picked up that material, please do that on your before you leave this morning. And thanks for all the good comments today.